I did this for a joke, but really, I'll let you see them. Anybody want to see any pictures? Pictures of my granddaughter. When Bea asked me last summer to do a book review, I was really pretty positive about it because I'd already been reading this one. So I promised, oh yes, I'd love to do a book review if I can choose the book. I know just the one, and I have enjoyed this so much. It's called Grandparents, Grandchildren, The Vital Connection. I don't know for sure how you say his name. I call him Arthur Kornhaber, K-O-R-N-H-A-B-E-R. He's a medical doctor, and Kenneth Woodard are the authors of this particular book, which can be purchased for $12.95. I assume that's what the sticker says. And Kenneth Woodard is a writer for Newsweek magazine. And I first heard of this book when I saw a review on it in the Dallas Morning News. And I was reading and I thought, hey, that fits me. That's just what I want to know more about. So I had the bookstore order this particular book, and I have given it as gifts to several people. In fact, I keep buying them all up. And I don't know if all these other grand... I only send it to what I consider good grandparents. Now, I don't... check passages and say this is you for the bad grandparents, but they do describe what good grandparents are like and what bad grandparents are like and what those that are in between are like. He did a study on 300 grandchildren and 300 grandparents. Now, they're not necessarily the grandparents of the grandchildren, but they did the study on the 300 grandchildren, finding out what their grandparents meant to them, and then on with interviewing these grandparents, what their grandchildren meant to them. And with the children, along with the interviews, they had them draw pictures. So I couldn't resist. Now, he has quite a few pictures in the book that I know you would enjoy seeing, but I reproduced three of them. And I don't really think they're too hard to figure out. Actually, this one says Patty knows her grandmother is, she knows that her grandmother is old and hobbled, but that's inconsequential to her. To Patty, she can't walk too well, but I like to snuggle to her and smell her, and she's the best back rubber in the world. And there's another quotation from a little boy in here who is 6 years old, and his grandmother is living with him, and she's terminally ill. And there are several children in the family, but they said he put it best. He says, "Grandmother's body is shrinking, but she's not shrinking." And so there are other passages in here which they say things like, to the child, the grandparent, you're old already, you know. If you're 40, you're already old to this grandchild. You never get any older. And so that's kind of nice, if you'll think about it. I mean, you just stay the same, which is wonderful and old and wise and some other things that I'll tell you about. Now, this picture down at the bottom, I love this, too. They keep stressing this in the book in several places. It doesn't matter. I mean, you can be a medical doctor. You could be the chairman of General Motors. It wouldn't matter the grandchild. If you're the grandmother, you're supposed to be in the kitchen. They place good grandmothers in the kitchen. They say good grandmothers are connected with food. Now, you may buy it frozen and serve it up. I don't know. But anyway, they said good grandmothers are connected with food. And one child was even kind of mad about it because his grandmother couldn't cook. And he just thought he'd really been kind of shortchanged. I guess he gathered from all these other children, their grandmothers cook a lot, and his couldn't or wouldn't, and so he felt pretty shortchanged. So I thought that was really interesting. They emphasized how important family dinners are, and kind of, some children, there are pictures in here that the child would draw with like grandma and grandpa kind of holding forth, presiding over all of these family members at the dinner. And in some cases, grandma and grandpa are up scurrying about and preparing the food. That's That's true. In fact, I don't believe there was a single picture, folks, and I'm assuming I'm talking to a whole lot of grandparents, but I don't believe there was a single picture in which the parents were up scurrying about and grandmother was sitting in her chair. So, folks, I hate to tell you, but just didn't see that. Okay, now this grandmother at the top, you would know that is not anybody's good grandmother, wouldn't you? Says Norma's Florida grandmother's portrayed as doll-like, which indicates a stereotyped relationship. Her grandmother, she used to like her grandmother, and her grandmother lived next door. But then they retired, and her grandmother moved to Florida. The grandparents moved to Florida. Made a child so mad she didn't know what to do. I mean, the idea, you know, they abandoned us, they moved to Florida to live down there in all that sunshine. Then, even after Grandpa died, she still didn't come back and live with them. And so the child said, you know, she spends all her time and all her money on herself. You know, so she drew her looking real nice there. But I did, and a little lost, I kind of think. But they had some pictures in here. One of them asked a child to draw his grandparents, and he simply drew a plane, airplane. His grandparents is always leaving, you know, goodbye all. And so that's the best. Another one, which is pretty similar, had the grandparent waving, and that's the way that child remembered his grandparent. But I thought the one with the plane was just pretty priceless. There is also one sad picture in here in which the child just drew the back of the grandmother, and this was a grandparent who had more or less abandoned the grandchildren along with the mother when the parents got a divorce, and so they hadn't seen that grandparent since. And so, they address that kind of problem in here, and in fact say that grandparents serve as a safety net under the children and under the whole family, and so that when the marriage breaks up, the grandchildren are supposed to fall into this safety net, you know, the security that lasts forever, and if parents get along or if they don't get along. Now, if you are not a meddlesome grandmother, you're not going to enjoy this review. Just want you to know, and then maybe you're going to find out why I enjoy it so much. But anyway, this is about what they call vitally connected grandparents, and these are grandparents who are involved, and they're in there interacting with this family, and they're probably asking a few questions and interested. You can use words like interested and involved instead of meddlesome. Now, let's all be sure we learn those. Interested, not meddlesome. I'll get to some more of that a little bit later on. But one of the questions they ask is, where have all the grandparents gone? And they think that we're having a problem in our age at this time with grandparents not being involved and not being interacting with their grandchildren and moving to Sun City and being concerned with their own friends and their own golfing and all of this, and not being involved and interacting with the children as they once did. This particular book is divided up into four main sections. What grandparents mean to grandchildren is discussed, and they have all these wonderful little excerpts and case studies, and I'll read a few of them to you. Where the quoting children, what grandparents mean to grandchildren, what grandchildren mean to grandparents, today's grandparents and emotional history, and then the fourth section is an agenda for grandparents. In other words, it's telling us, what if we're alienated from our grandchildren, how to get back in the game and how to get involved. They say every time a child is born, a grandparent is born. And that's kind of a nice thought. Every time a child is born, a grandparent is born. This book is about the family, Specifically, it's about the three-generation family, which they said sociologists say that this no longer exists, but it exists through the children. And every child knows he's a grandchild, and every grandparent knows he or she is a grandparent. That emotional attachments is what this vital connection is all about. He says we can know about each other, but you have to experience one another. You have to interact with each other in order to know each other. Emotional attachments cannot be measured. They can only be experienced. He also addresses this wonderful phenomenon that we're all familiar with, that normal conflicts that occur between children and parents don't exist between grandparents and grandchildren. Now, grandparents love their grandchildren and conversely, but we don't seem to be quite as intensely involved with the grandchild, and I guess then with the grandchild's accomplishments. So that we have a little bit different kind of relationship with the grandchild than we do with our children, or than our children have with their child. He says, in short, grandparents and grandchildren do not have to do anything to make each other happy. You know, we don't have to do anything. We just have to be there. Just being together makes us happy. We don't have to do anything. They don't have to accomplish anything. And like this stack of pictures I have of Katie here, she's not doing anything. Now, you would say she isn't doing anything remarkable. I just think it's remarkable. You know, look at her little hand. Oh, look at the cute little, and look at this expression. Look at that expression. And my husband appreciates it, and hardly anybody else does for some reason. But that I think this, oh, isn't this wonderful, and isn't that wonderful. Now, I want to read on what grandparents mean to grandchildren. I picked out a few selections here that I think are neat. This one says, I think of my grandparents a lot. I talk to them in my head when I'm alone, especially when I have a problem. I think of what they would say to me. I really need them for reassurance. It's different from my parents. Weird. I feel guilty saying this, but they are so proud and enthusiastic about us. Not more than my parents, of course, but I guess they show it more. I'll tell you, I don't know what I did to have them love me and make such a fuss about me. It's almost embarrassing sometimes. I mean, when I'm around my friends, but I really love it. Grandma makes sure that everything grows good and nothing dies. Look how tall she is. This child's drawing a picture of his grandmother towering up above everybody. Nothing bad can ever happen to me when she is looking. I look forward to coming home from school and Grandma's always there with milk and cookies. Always there. This little boy says, my grandfather shows me how to garden and grow vegetables. I watch him carefully and I help him plant. When I grow up, I'll show my children how to do it. My grandfather said that he learned gardening from his grandfather. So it's really like my grandfather's grandfather taught me too. And this is something, a point that they make here, I think is really neat. They said when the grandchild is born, it's like there are five generations. Because the grandparent can remember his parents or her parents and her grandparents. So it's like I can remember my mother, and I can remember my grandmother, and frankly, I can't remember my grandmother's grandmother, but in my head, my grandmother's grandmother is a very real person. Do you know why? I can still remember very well all those stories. My grandmother used to talk about her grandmother all the time. And her grandmother was a safety net because my grandmother's mother died in childbirth when she was born. And who took care of her? What did she call her? Grandma. Oh, Grandma O'Banion took care of my grandmother and reared her. So you see, I heard about old Grandma O'Banion, who probably was born in the 1820s. So so you see there you're going back several generations and then all the way down to Katie. So you have five or seven generations here in the memories of these people that you talk about and relate stories about. So he says, my grandfather's grandfather sort of taught me too. Okay. Then there's one about, it says, among both boys and girls, the dominant image of grandmother is that of grand nurturer. Grandfather may be an expert, the fixer, the teacher in the ways of the world, but his expertise is in matters that lie outside the family circle. What grandmother knows and does is inside the home. Whether or not she holds a job outside of job, whether or not she holds an outside job, the home is the center of children's lives, and their grandmother rules. Her kitchen is her command post, and everyone, kids, parents, and grandfather, is dependent upon her table. And this child says, I run across to visit her, and the first thing she asked me is whether I had enough to eat today. Does that sound familiar? And then she says, eat a little more. The food she has really tastes good. I'd rather eat my grandmother's cooking than at McDonald's. It says, she's always got something special for me. She says to me that cooking for people makes her happy and that she gets pleasure when she sees me eating and enjoying the food she cooks for me. I don't understand that because I'm the one who's eating it and not her. Maybe I'll know what she means when I grow up. So I think those are some excerpts that have a lot of them in here of what grandparents mean to the grandchildren. Then they have a few on what grandchildren have meant to grandparents, and I'll just read just a little bit for you. You see, when I was young, I had a large family. Most of our fun and pleasure came from the family. The world was just a place to get enough money to live from so the family could eat. We lived for each other. We talked about each other all the time. When we were all together talking and gossiping, I love gossip, no one wanted to be the first to go home because they knew that they would get it after they left. But it was all in fun. We never knew what bored meant. So yeah, and goes on to say how that this relating stories and talking about one another, which you might call gossip, but then this is sharing on an emotional level, the events of all of our lives. And kind of contrast that with over here on page 93, this other lady says, when the grandbabies were born, my wife and I said, no, this is a man, I assume. When the grandbabies were born, my wife and I said that we weren't going to get involved. Let them lead their own lives. We didn't babysit. We were too busy with our friends, I guess. We did spend time with the grandchildren when they were young. In fact, we still have some of the toys here they played with when they were young. They come for a visit now and then. But they have their own lives and we have ours. We keep to ourselves now. We don't want to meddle in the children's lives. I let the youngsters run their own lives and make their own mistakes. And then his wife comes in with saying, if I think about it, I might have some influence. The fact that I exist means I have influence, but I don't know how or what. Anyway, it's not too good to get too close. I don't want my grandchildren or my children to feel they owe me anything and that they are responsible for me, that I would interfere with their family or their financial status or be a burden. I don't think it is right for any family to know what is going on in the other family. I think there should be a period of time, weeks, when I haven't the faintest idea what anyone is doing. I wouldn't like it if they knew my business. If we were too close, I might become critical of them. It's better for me not to be a busybody. I don't know how the grandchildren feel about that. Folks, I would certainly have a much lower phone bill if I had that lady's attitude. But I don't think I would enjoy life, and I think that I would lose my grandchildren. I think I would lose my children if I had this don't get involved I let them live their own life, a kind of attitude. He has some discussion here of contributions of grandparents that I'll talk to you about. One is the historian, which I've alluded to already in talking about, you know, 5 or 7 generations. But grandparents serve as historians. He says, be colorful. That gets their attention more. And it's all, you know, don't tell them the boring family stories. Tell them the interesting family stories. And they'll remember them. Like I was saying about my grandmother's grandmother, whatever she is, great. She has a story about when my grandfather came home from the Civil War. My grandmother was out under a tree with the wash tubs, and she's washing. And the girl who was an ex-slave girl said, I do think I see the young master coming. And he was coming home from the Civil War and had been a prisoner up in Rock Island, Illinois. And he got off the boat in the middle of the Mississippi River in Vicksburg, and he swam to shore. See, I know all that. I wasn't there. My grandmother was born in 1866, so I don't believe she was there. But she knows the story. I had trouble believing she wasn't there, as well as she knew that story. And you might have trouble thinking I wasn't, as well as I know it. And I have a picture in my living room at the present time of Grandpa O'Banion. This is the very same person who swam the Mississippi River to go home from the Civil War. And I have his picture in my living room. I'm going to give it to one of my children, whichever one I think acts nicest. Maybe I'll pass him up. I'll just give it to Katie, okay. but anyway, the family heirlooms are important. They said, if you must, think about it carefully before you move from your home where you have always been and has all of these treasures and you that are not really treasures to anyone else, but they mean something to the family. Grandchildren love to look around in attics and in basements, and then I can remember spending hours looking in my grandmother's trunk. Now, among other things in her trunk, she had a quilt. Every time she had a grandchild born, she made us a quilt, and mine was an appliqué pansy. My brother had a tulip. My other brother had a star. And she didn't give them to us till we were grown, so we could go up and visit her, and we could look through the trunk, and there are the quilts. And there was a broken ring that was a ruby ring, and a few other such treasures. But that we could look at. You can also look at pictures. You look at dishes. My mother-in-law has a set of china that's really, I know she bought it on a bargain because all the plates are warped. I mean, none of them sit straight. But Heather admired that china so much because it was translucent. You could see your hand through it. Heather was about 9 and she thought that was wonderful china. And she embarrassed me to death because she asked her grandmother, who was then probably 60, if she could have it when she died. And so, so I had to, you know, do my homework there. But anyway, these kinds of things and listening to stories and rummaging around are extremely important. It's important to have special rooms and special places. Now, we've already mentioned the kitchen, with Grandpa, sometimes it's the workshop, sometimes it's the porch. My mother did a lot of quilting, and she would sit in a certain place, and when her quilts were up, she sat in another chair when the quilts weren't up, and she drank iced tea. And I think my children can remember Mother sitting in that window and drinking tea and talking to them. This sort of thing is extremely important. It is important to make every child feel like they are your favorite, if possible. There are some grandparents who are really able to do that, but they said there is a special kind of feeling for a child who thinks that they're the grandparent's favorite. And they'll model after the grandparent to a large extent. It may not be possible always, but insofar as it's possible, it's really important to make these children. My grandmother, I don't know about the other grandchildren, I just know I was her favorite. Now, I don't know if they think they were. They may think they were, but they weren't, because I was. And I was the only daughter of her only daughter. I was not her only granddaughter. She had sons and she had I was the only daughter of her only daughter. So I have her wedding ring, which I wear all, that one right there. That's my grandmother's wedding ring. My grandmother had four husbands, and men didn't live too long in those days. Sometimes a woman didn't, but the men. And this wedding ring I have was the one from her last marriage, which was my grandfather. And it's special to me to wear my grandmother's wedding ring. She gave me a yo-yo quilt she made after she was 80, and that's special to me. And so these kinds of things make you relate, I think, to your grandparents, and I can remember all kinds of things, characteristics that she had. She was a little fiery and very outspoken, to be exact, which seems to be a problem I have. And I don't feel too badly about it, because why? My grandmother had that, and she's a lovely lady, and everybody knows she's in heaven. So I figure you can go there with that trait. But they did make the point that children often will model after grandparents, especially one who if they feel they are their favorite grandchild. The grandparent serves as a mentor. And now this was sort of interesting, I think, not just in teaching you how to do things, but they discuss how that often the grandmother interacting with the grandchild is doing feminine kinds of things. The grandpa is doing masculine kinds of things, and that very frequently then it is grandpa who is serving as a masculine role model and grandmother as a feminine role model for the children. And I thought that was sort of neat. I also, in reading through that and thinking about it, and now I just read the whole thing and relating it to myself, and you can tell that from my discussion today, but I was thinking about my husband and how much like Grandpa Bogle his mother thinks he is. Now, Grandpa Bogle is her dad. Britt didn't really interact that much with Grandpa Bogle, literally. He just did in his mother's mind all the time. And so, oh, she thinks Brent is wonderful. And Heather, my daughter, teases him about it. You know, oh, yes, your grandma's a little precious, you know. But she thinks he's wonderful. And the surlier he gets, the more wonderful she thinks he is. You know, he can just sit over there and not interact and go, and she thinks, you know why? Oh, he's so much like Papa. He's just like Papa. She says that all the time. Just like Papa. And so here she is, 86, and Brent still being like Papa. He's getting more like him every day. But just like Papa. And I think that influences Brent, and it certainly it influences even down to the grandchildren, you see. Okay, grandchildren, another thing they said, we serve as sort of wizards. Now, we are wizards. We can work miracles that the children can't quite, their parents can't quite work. Somehow, Grandpa can fix everything. Grandpa can fix everything, and Grandma can cook everything, or make everything, or her back rubs are somehow better. But we are wizards, and they have a story in there about this little child who remembered, well, he's talking about Christmas. He says, Grandpa makes himself real small and comes down the chimney every Christmas. And maybe some children think their parents do that. But anyway, Grandpa is, you know, just has a little special touch. And then this quality of being great nurturers, and they call grandparents great parents. But that they're the primary caretakers, as I explained, when the, what, taking over for the children when the children are not able to fulfill that function, and serve as adjuncts to the family. And that a child really can't get too much love, regardless of what some people may think. They really can't. And it's a wonderful, just a pure gift, is the way to explain, just a pure gift to the child. Okay, some grandparents who had close bonds with their children shared the following characteristics. They placed an emotional priority on their lives. It's relationships. I love that. I read it to Brent all the time, because that's what I say about my phone bill. I say, I just invest in people, you know, you lose your child. To the family, and family members knew where to find them. Even more, family members knew that they would respond if asked. And we're in some trouble now with the kind of grandparents that we now have who are not available. I know of this one family where the great-grandmother is the one who is filling the gap. The great-grandmother is in her late 60s. But she's the one who's taking care of this little child. You know what? Both the grandmothers are working. Both the child's grandmothers are working, and her mother's working, and who's filling in? When the child gets sick and can't go to daycare, who takes care of her? Takes her to the doctor? Great-grandmother. But great-grandmother and great-grandpa adore that child, and she adores them. And they look forward to her coming over, but they have a vital part in her life. Okay, good grandparents are by nature altruistic people. They're highly sensitive to the feelings of others. They're relatively immune to social trends. They acted upon their intuition and feelings and had a strong sense that their actions were right. This sense of doing right often placed them in conflict with the opinions of their friends and made them skeptical of outside experts. In other words, some other people may be telling you that you're meddling. I told you that. Just don't believe them, you know, or that you're spending too much time, or my husband saying you're making too many phone calls, or you know, whatever. I don't believe him. He doesn't know what he's talking about. I know that's just what I need to be doing, is talking, and you've got to talk a while, don't you? You can't just say, oh, how's the weather? And you've got to kind of relax, and then you get this conversation going, and it costs, you know, 25 or 40 cents a minute. But anyway, think what a company dinner would cost, right? I mean, I've got all the fresh now. Notice this, they related well to people of all ages, even those who were, quote, trendy. Have you noticed that? The good grandparents, they don't care if his hair's long. Now, sometimes grandparents get a little testy about it, but these good ones, you know, they can laugh. It's not their kid, I guess, who's looking, quote, trendy. Or nowadays with this punk business that I see on campus a bit. But the grandparents can kind of move with the time. They know who their grandchildren's friends are. They know what their interests are. And they might even get a little interested in that music up to a point, surely. Not too far, but up to a point. That more than the parents can. They just aren't quite as involved. It says, although these people espouse traditional values, we found that they were able to relate to different types of people. In fact, people sought them out. Then they have a section on what's gone wrong. The functions, on one side's a list of the functions of grandparents, on the other are the institutional replacements. Now listen to this. Theaters, Sunday at grandmother's house. What's replaced it? Restaurants, fast food outlets, and junk food. Caretakers, what's replaced us? Babysitters, daycare centers, schools, medical professionals, jails, television. I thought they were carrying a little too far. Negotiators between, they even suggest we should be negotiators between a child and a parent. Can you imagine getting so meddlesome? Okay. Says that, okay, who replaces us if we aren't there? The child's peer group, family and personal therapists, experts on child rearing, mentors, who replaces us? School teachers, television, peers, rock stars, and other celebrities. As role models, media stereotypes of elders, or nobody. Connections with the past, and then in our place, television, movies, family albums, parental memories. Connections with the future, televisions, movies, science fiction, other sources of fantasy. Realistic examples of old people as individuals. What again is a replacement? Television, movies, science fiction, and other sources of fantasy, and media stereotypes. So they think the question is, what has gone wrong and why? And they think that this came about, they blame the Social Security Administration, I think. But anyway, it started back in the 30s when we started thinking of being able to retire. They said this created a whole different mindset, and somewhere the grandparents start thinking of retiring and living the good life at 65, and then we became persuaded that we should bring our children up to be free and independent and unencumbered, and that all of this has come about probably since World War II, but this attitude of that children shouldn't have to look after their parents, that the Social Security and the government and whoever is going to look after them, and that the parents should be able to be free and unencumbered and make their own rules and make their own decisions and look after themselves. He says, the more disconnected grandparents are, the more they describe their relationships with their grandchildren in terms of a contract. According to these terms, intimate involvement with grandchildren equals meddling. Interest in their grandchildren's lives equals interference in their children's families. Intimacy is interpreted as emotional dependence. Advice is viewed as controlling. Emotions themselves imply weakness. The new social contract also functions as a positive alternative for those adults who do not want to acknowledge their grandparenthood, much less establish emotional bonds with their grandchildren. As one highly disconnected grandmother summed matters up, I don't want to depend upon my grandchildren for emotion. So then they have a section on what to do, and I'll give you, lastly here, a few pointers on if you want to turn things around. Number one, establish a visual, you'll just love this, establish a visual concept of your family as a pyramid, no matter how dispersed or detached its members may be, and locate your place in it. Imagine that you're at the top of the pyramid, looking down at your descendants, and that your children and grandchildren are looking at you, the person they all have in common. So he says, do this in an imaginary way. Now he says that a lot of grandparents think that they are not needed. Now the way you persuade a grandparent that they are needed is to get the grandparents to start thinking about their grandparents. So if you're working with grandparents and they're saying they don't need me, you just have them start thinking about their grandparents and what their grandparents did for them and meant to them, and then they will start seeing they are needed. He says the grandparents must rebuild the family pyramid. There is only one way to do this, by establishing and maintaining vital connections to every family member. It may get tedious, but you have to do the phoning, you have to do the writing, you have to do the visiting. It says this, in many cases, this will require a great deal of perseverance. The easiest approach is to begin at the beginning when the grandchild is born, to prepare for the event and to be there when the baby is born. How about that? I like that. When Katie was born, we weren't there when she was born, but we were there as fast as you can get there from Abilene to Houston. And they let grandparents hold the baby. That's called bonding. It works. Anyway, they said, if possible, you know, just have everybody lined up, all four grandparents and the great-grandparents too, if you want, out there in the waiting room, silly as it may look. Okay, in order to maintain vital connections, grandparents need only to spend generous amounts of time with their grandchildren. Doesn't have to be generous amounts of money, generous amounts of time. Grandparents must also be mobile if vital connections are to survive at all. Plan family vacations together so you can spend long days with the children. Now, there's a picture in here this kid has drawn. He says, my grandmother tells everybody to get out of here and leave us alone. She wants to be alone with me some. So I imagine everybody enjoys that. It says, get to know your grandchildren's friends. Ask about them when you call. In between visits, write each grandchild individually. Whenever you can, send homemade gifts that your grandchildren can pass on to your great-grandchildren. They don't have to be pass-onable. I've noticed around here at ACU, they can be edibles, okay? Consumable, okay? Children understand that what you make for them is part of you, like heirlooms, and so are more valuable than store-bought gifts. Be guardians of the young. Let everyone in your family know that they have you to rely on in a family emergency. Insist on helping when adversity strikes. Above all, don't allow differences between you and your children to stand in the way of direct connections with your grandchildren. At all costs, protect the children from the effects of parental strife. If parents separate, be prepared to move in as surrogates. If the mother has to take a full-time job, move in as surrogate. If illness strikes, move in as surrogate. If you are not living in the same place as your family when adversity strikes, then go there. In this way, children can be protected and maintained in the bosom of the family. Don't let strangers in outside institutions or experts do what you as a grandparent can do naturally. Follow your grandchildren into society. For lack of available adults, children become prematurely attached only to their peers, which fosters generational stratifications. And then they also give some things to do, some tips for helping other people's, you know, other children. They're not your natural grandchildren, but things that we can do to help society in general. Now, the last thing I'm going to do, I ask my class, my sophomores, to write what their grandparents had meant to them. And I got these wonderful things. This one says, my grandfather on my mother's side is named A.L. Franklin. If any of you know him, okay, his name's Greg Bonner. He insists that it's just A.L., not Al, and the Al doesn't stand for anything. I think that I get some of my traits from him. A lot of things I say to people to describe something, I get from him. Then he goes on down and says, I can see some of the things that they have, like a long life together with someone special and a big old garden and fried rabbit and squirrel. And don't forget cherry cobbler. He is really waxing eloquent there. And here's one who says, that my brother and I are their favorites, and all about the things that she cooks. And she says, I know if anything ever happened to my parents, I would also have a place in my grandparents' home. This one says, she came to visit us the majority of my life up until her death. She was always taking care of us and buying things for us. I think there for a while I was closer to her than I was to my own mother. And the grandfather, I remember, every birthday he would send the amount of money of our age. And so when she was 10, that was a big occasion, she got a $10 bill. And then this last one that I'll read to you says, I have always lived around my father's parents. My grandmother is a very confident, headstrong person. I'm so surprised how well she has taken the death of my grandfather. She grieves, but still manages to retain her spirit of confidence and self-sufficiency. In the past months, I believe my grandmother has taught me more about love and marriage and self-confidence than I could ever learn in school or church. Okay, I recommend this book. I'll show you pictures of my granddaughter or let you read my essays. Thank you.